Today, the Supreme Court heard arguments in two cases with a potentially enormous impact on race relations in American life. At issue are two separate admissions systems at the University of Michigan, admission systems that use race as a so-called plus factor in evaluating applicants. 25 years ago, in the famous Bakke case, the Supreme Court upheld affirmative action programs in college admission as long as there were no fixed numerical quotas and as long as race was one of a number of factors considered. Factors such as where the applicant was from, his or her special talents, and whether the applicant's parents were alumni.
But now the High Court is reconsidering the question, and in a mark of the importance of this issue, the court, for only the second time in its history, today released audio of the arguments. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg was at the High Court today and has our report.
We will take resegregation, equal equality education. We will take resegregation.
The sidewalks and streets around the court were clogged with demonstrators this morning. The Marble Palace, usually so quiet, was the center of a political and legal battle, the likes of which has not been seen since Bush versus Gore. The eventual outcome of today's cases will have ramifications far beyond the halls of academia, extending from college and scholarship opportunities to the question of whether employers can use race as a factor in evaluating job applicants. The cases before the court today involve two quite different affirmative action programs at the University of Michigan. At the undergraduate school, where there are some 20,000-plus applicants for 4,000 slots, the university initially uses a point system. Of the 150 possible points, 110 are for academics and 40 for other factors, including alumni parents, 8 points, state residency, 10 points, and 20 points possible for being either from an underrepresented minority group or from a disadvantaged socioeconomic class, or if the applicant is a desired athlete. After the initial scoring, each applicant is further evaluated based on essays, recommendations, etc. At the law school, ranked 7th best in the country, there is no point scoring system, in large part because the numbers of applicants are much smaller. University officials describe the law school system as more holistic, with a major focus on achieving diversity. The white students challenging these programs assert that they would likely have been admitted had the school not used racial preferences. Both had excellent grades and acceptable board scores, and certainly were among the pool of qualified applicants. Inside the courtroom today, they sat in an audience speckled with the famous and powerful. The only stars, though, were the advocates and the justices. First up was lawyer Kirk Colbo, representing the white applicants who were rejected for admission at the university. He said they were treated unequally and unconstitutionally because the school takes race into account in seeking to achieve a diverse student body. Colbo was just over a minute into his argument when he was interrupted by Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, widely viewed as the swing vote on this issue. A university gets thousands of applications, she noted, for just a few slots.
Inherent in that setting is making choices about what students to admit. So there are many reasons why a particular student would be admitted or not. And a lot of factors go into it.
Well, Your Honor, first of all, race is impermissible because of the constitutional command of equality. The university is certainly free to make many different kinds of choices in selecting students.
You say that's not, it can't be a factor at all, that it cannot be
our view,
one of many factors.
Our view, Your Honor, is that race itself should not be a factor among others.
Justice Anthony Kennedy, another possible swing vote, followed with questions about the need to train more minorities for leadership positions.
If year after year after year there's an underrepresentation, there is no cause for the state or the government or its educational experts to be...
The mere fact of underrepresentation, that is that, say, blacks are not represented as they are in the population, is not a concern that would justify racial preferences.
Justice Ginsburg called attention to a brief filed by retired heads of the military academies and former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The brief argues that without affirmative action, the military would return to the disastrous disciplinary problems of the Vietnam era, when an almost all-white officer corps commanded an enlisted force that was more than 25% minority.
What is your answer to the argument made in that brief that there simply is no other way to have armed forces in which minorities will be represented not only largely among the enlisted members, but also among the officer cadre?
I believe race could not be used, Your Honor. I think that other solutions could be looked at, addressing the problem of why there aren't minorities in the military.
Justice Stevens, the service academies do give racial preferences. Answer, we don't know if that's true. Justice Souter, pointing to the service academy's written affirmative action policies, you think there's any serious question about that? Returning to the University of Michigan cases, Kolbo contended that there are alternatives to using race that will produce diversity in college attendance, using economic disadvantage as a preference, for example. Justice Souter was disdainful.
Do you seriously believe that that would be anything but a surrogate for race?
Justice Kennedy, would you allow recruiting targeted at minorities? Answer, yes. Could you spend government money for training? Answer, yes. Justice Breyer, so if you can use race as a criterion in recruiting or spending government scholarship money, if you can give preferences to the children of alumni, what is the difference in using race as a factor in evaluating university applicants? Answer, the difference is the Equal Protection Clause. It doesn't apply to alumni.
There's something special about race in this country. It's why we have a constitution about it.
Justice Ginsburg, why do you draw the line at college admission when, as I understood you, it would be all right to recruit or to give minority students only the benefit of scholarships to help them prepare for college?
Because it doesn't prevent someone from applying. The key is to be able to compete on the same footing at the point of competition.
Justice Ginsburg, well, if you're right, then there could be no affirmative action in employment. Kolbo agreed. Representing the Bush administration, Solicitor General Ted Olson had filed a brief that took a middle ground position about the Michigan cases. But in court today, he was an impassioned opponent of affirmative action. Pressed by several justices about the brief filed by the retired military officers, Olson was adamant.
The position of the United States is that we do not accept the proposition that black soldiers will only fight for white black officers or the reverse. That race-neutral means should be used in the academies as well as other places.
Justice Stevens, but you recognize that the military academies do have race preferences? Answer, yes. Question, is that illegal? Answer, we haven't examined that. Justice Breyer and Justice Souter moved on to some of the alternatives to affirmative action programs, pointing to Texas, where the top 10% of high school students are guaranteed admission at the University of Texas. The state legislators who designed the program, Justice Breyer noted, had specifically said they wanted to achieve the same racial diversity achieved by affirmative action. But Olson wasn't buying that.
Justice Breyer, don't believe that that is the stated motive of the Texas plan or the California or the Florida plan. Those are intended to open up those institutions to a broader selection.
General, what do you say to the argument that the only reason it accomplishes it is because it depends on segregation at the lower level of the schools?
No, there is no evidence that it depends upon segregation of the schools in Texas or in any other place.
Olson was followed to the lectern by lawyer Maureen Mahoney, representing the University of Michigan Law School. Justice Scalia, the university's problem is of its own making because it's chosen to become an elite institution, one of the best in the country.
Now, if Michigan really cares enough about that racial imbalance, why doesn't it do, as many other state law schools do, lower the standards, not have a flagship elite law school? Solves the problem.
Your Honor, there is a compelling interest in having an institution that is both academically excellent and richly diverse.
Lawyer Mahoney disputed the notion that the university has quotas, noting that the number of minorities admitted to the law school has ranged from 9% to 12% of the class. She conceded, though, that the university seeks to admit what it calls a critical mass of minority students. Enough, she said, so that there are not just tokens, enough so that classes and social contacts are genuinely diverse. Chief Justice Rehnquist was not persuaded, repeatedly calling the idea of critical mass a quota. Justice Scalia likewise was disdainful.
Is 2% a critical mass, Ms. Mahoney?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
Okay. 4%?
No, Your Honor.
You have to pick some number, don't
well,
you?
Well, actually, what
like
the...
Like 8 is 8%?
Your Honor, the...
Now, does it stop being a quota because it's somewhere between 8 and 12, but it is a quota if it's 10? I don't understand that reasoning. Once
Your
you
Honor?
Use the term critical mass... And you're into quota land.
Your Honor, what a quota is under this court's cases is a fixed number. And there is no fixed number here. The testimony was that it depends on the characteristics of the applicant pool.
Justice O'Connor moved on to how affirmative action programs should be tailored to be constitutional.
In all programs which this court has upheld, you could see at the end, an end to it. There is none in this, is there?
What the policy says, of course, is that it will only take race into account as long as it is necessary in order to achieve the educational objectives.
Indeed, said Lawyer Mahoney, even with affirmative action, the minority applicants are among the best in the country. At the law school, all are in the top 16% of all those who take law boards nationally. Justice Ginsburg, and what percentage of white students would have been admitted if race had not been a factor? Answer, 5%. Justice Scalia pounced.
I don't know any other area where we decide the case by saying, well, there are very few people who are being treated unconstitutionally. I mean, if this indeed is an unconstitutional treatment of this woman because of her race, surely it doesn't make any difference whether she is one of very few who have been treated unconstitutionally.
I think you can regard that as a statement rather than a question.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That last was from Chief Justice Rehnquist. After today's argument, it seemed even clearer than before that the court is split 4-4 in the Michigan cases, with Justice O'Connor likely to be the deciding vote. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
Full NPR coverage of the University of Michigan cases, from the first U.S. District Court ruling to today's Supreme Court arguments, is on our website, npr.org.